Russia appears to be broadening the war map in Ukraine. It is now carrying out airstrikes in the western part of the country in this third week of the conflict. And it has been especially brutal. Russian forces have encircled small cities, choking them off from food and water. And troops continue to have the capital, Kyiv, in their sights. Let's talk now about Russia's military strategy and capabilities with retired Brigadier General Kevin Ryan. He's senior fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Now, before this war, Russian troops were modernizing. They appeared to succeed in annexing Crimea and supporting separatists in eastern Ukraine. Now a lot of military analysts say the Russian military seems to be bogged down. Is that how you see it?
It is. I follow the Russian military, well, for over 40 years, but very much so in the recent years, watching their reform, the so-called New Look reforms, which began in 2008. And they were much on display in Crimea, and it seemed like they had paid great dividends because that operation went off very well. But I and others like me have had to recalibrate our assessment of the Russian military based on its performance in the first couple of weeks here in this invasion of Ukraine. It's not gone very well.
Is there a leading theory as to what's happening? I have read that some analysts say the Russians may have the hardware and the personnel, but the software, the logistics aren't going so well.
Well, the logistics are one of the key problems that have shown themselves in the past couple of weeks. You know, General Gerasimov, the chief of the general staff, likes to say that the character of every war is different and unique, and you have to plan for that unique character of it. In this case, I think that the general staff has gotten it wrong. They did not plan appropriately. They did not understand the resistance that was going to come forward. They didn't understand the sanctions and the response by NATO. So lots of mistakes at the high level and also at the lower levels.
We've been watching Kyiv, of course, the capital, where there had been a massive military convoy that now, based on satellite images, seems to have dispersed into the woods and into small towns. What does that tell you?
Well, what that tells me specifically about the operation near Kyiv is that something new is about to happen. The Russian military will either begin to hold Kyiv at siege, in other words, surround it, cut it off from resupply, et cetera, or they may even begin to bombard it like they have with Kharkov and other cities.
Well, the Russian military is a large one with great resources. What other military capabilities does Russia have that we haven't seen yet? On the ground, in the air, reinforcements?
Well, we've seen almost all of their ground capability. There may be some types of weapons that haven't been used yet in the assault. There's some armored vehicles that accompany tanks, for example, and would destroy Ukrainian infantry. We haven't seen those. But the big thing that we haven't seen yet is anything nuclear. And God forbid that we would get to that level, but that would be the only thing left.
Let me ask you about the American role. The Pentagon, at least publicly, is backing away from providing indirect fighter jet support, that is, subbing in for Polish MiGs, which would be sent to Ukraine for them to use. Do you think this idea is off the table for good?
I hope it's not. I don't think it's off the table for good because I think the conditions in Ukraine are changing week to week. I think that it's possible we may change our policy on the kinds of aid and no-fly zones, et cetera, as conditions change there. I think we should deliver the MiGs. I think we should allow Ukrainian pilots to fly them into the Ukraine and use them.
And what about the concern that this could be an escalation?
It would be an escalation of a sort because we are providing lots of military equipment, lethal aid, people like to call it, anti-tank weapons, Stinger weapons, and so on. This is just another type of lethal weapon. It's a big one. It's spectacular because it's an aircraft, yes, but on a scale, it's just a little bit farther down from where we are now. You know, Russia sees this as a war against NATO. they don't even recognize the nationality of Ukraine, the national entity. They see it as a war against NATO, and the United States should start looking at it through that prism too. We are at war with Russia, even if we're not shooting right now.
In your view, what would a no-fly zone accomplish?
Well, number one, it would protect civilians and refugees who are moving from the eastern part of Ukraine through the western part of Ukraine and then on to safe haven in other countries. These people will be at grave risk during their whole entire journey from the east into the west. And I think we could do a no-fly zone. I think at some point we're going to not be able to turn away from the atrocities that we're hearing about any longer and have to do something like this.
Let me ask you about the information war. The Ukrainian side has put out videos of Russian soldiers saying they didn't know they would actually be fighting a war in Ukraine. Vladimir Putin has gone on television to promote his big lie that this is just a special military operation, his euphemism. What happens if Vladimir Putin loses ground globally or at home in the propaganda war?
Well, it could be the end of his regime at the far extreme result. At the very least, it will degrade his power both domestically. It already has internationally. He has mounted an IO campaign, information operation campaign, but it's mostly been for a domestic audience. And it's worked pretty much. Over half the people there still support him and believe what he's saying about the war. Internationally, no one believes that. The problem with his information operation is that the lie is so unsustainable as to what's going on that it's only a matter of time before the majority of people understand what really has been happening. And then his regime will be on shaky ground for sure.
Yeah. From Vladimir Putin's perspective, I guess based on your long study and analysis of the Russian military, how might this end?
Well, this is the question that everyone's asking, and I will answer that question. But let me say first, we should be asking ourselves, how do we want this to end? In other words, we should be deciding what kind of an ending is acceptable to us, the United States and NATO, and then we should be doing things to make that ending come about. We're not really, we're kind of watching this like a movie, and we're waiting to see if we're going to walk out saying, gee, that was a terrible movie, or I like the ending. But the way I think this is going to end is that there will likely not be a negotiated settlement or treaty at the end, because what Putin is demanding from Ukraine, Ukraine will not give. And what Ukraine wants, Crimea and its land back, Putin will not give. So I see that this will probably end up with I won't call it a truce, but a ceasefire of sorts, kind of like the Korean War ended, where nobody declared themselves winner or loser, along a new line, maybe the Dnieper River, and along the south, with the Ukraine cut off from the Black Sea, some sort of rump state, as we call it, of Ukraine, with no treaty at all. And in a kind of a perpetual Cold War status that gets hot along the lines. The issue is that the United States is not in a position to affect what the negotiated settlement will be, because we're not there. We're not in the fight. And this is completely between Ukraine and Russia, according to how we look at it and how NATO looks at it.
Kevin Ryan, retired Brigadier General, is senior fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School. Kevin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott.